So the topic of the talk this evening is like helping children with their problems. Thank you. So it's helping children with their problems. And one of the important things of the Buddhist teachings, and one of the main reasons why it's growing so strongly in many countries, is the way these ancient Buddhist teachings can be used for everyday problems. As you know, the Buddha taught about how to overcome suffering, problems in life. And if these teachings of 2,500 years ago cannot be used in today's world, then I think Buddhism will die out. But the reason that Buddhism is growing so strongly is that these techniques discovered by the Buddha and taught for many centuries are actually very wonderful in helping deal with all of the problems of life. And as my life as a monk, I've given talks on so many different subjects. Even on one day I gave a talk at a radio show in Perth. I never realized until I actually got into the studio that the topic of the talk was on adult themes. I should have really asked first of all, because sometimes you may ask, what does a monk know about such things? What does a monk know about children? Because I am celibate, never had children, but nevertheless, a doctor does not need to have cancer to be able to treat those diseases. When you understand the underlying problems of life, you can apply those problems to all situations. And this evening we're going to apply those wonderful methods to dealing with our children. For those of you who have children, they can be a great source of happiness and a great source of pride. They can also be a great source of suffering, a great source of worry as well. So hopefully this evening that they'll lessen the suffering and give you more reason for pride. Because you see that many children growing up, they're very sensitive young plants, just like little saplings growing in a garden. They're very sensitive, and sometimes we don't realize just how easy they are to be hurt. And so part of our attitude towards children is again getting greater sensitivity to the children who are put into our care. That sensitivity is very important because there are times when a child does need discipline. There's a time when the child needs forgiveness. There's a time when the child needs care, just love and acceptance. Time when they need praise and time when they need to be told off. I do remember sitting on a public bus in Perth and just listening to the conversation of children after they come out from school. And as I was listening to the conversation of these children, I heard that teenagers especially, spending the whole bus journey criticizing one another. Two girls, you've got a big nose. Yeah, but look at you, you've got sort of big ears. Yeah, but you've got spots, so you've got ugly hair. And it's the same with the boys as well. If you listen to how children speak, so often they speak with what we call in Buddhism the fault-finding mind. That fault-finding mind is encouraged in our schools. It's part of education to see the faults in life and to try and fix up those faults. But unfortunately, because sometimes in our education systems in life, we only speak to a person to tell them what's wrong, it means that sometimes our children don't get enough encouragement. When you speak to your children, how many times do you speak to them to tell them what they're doing wrong? And how many times do you say something to them to tell them what they're doing right? Unfortunately, that if you look at yourself and catch yourself, the way you speak to one another, you will actually find that most of the time you spend your words talking to your children, telling them what they're doing wrong, how they can do things better, they must work harder, they must do better, they mustn't watch too many video games, they mustn't do this. So often, all the children, what they hear from us is complaints. Now do you understand why the children cause you so much trouble in return? There's a, what we have, a very important law in Buddhism called the law of karma. So if your children are causing you suffering, it must be your fault. There must be something, don't blame your children. It must be something you're doing as well. There's an old saying which I got from my teacher, Ajahn Chah. It's a saying which I use for many different situations and circumstances. When we talk about fault finding, it's called complaining. And Ajahn Chah, my great teacher, would always say, no, you should not complain about anything. He said, complaining or finding fault with somebody else is like having an itch on your bottom and scratching your head. Now, do you understand the meaning of that very profound saying? If you have an itch on your bottom and you scratch your head, you get two itches for the price of one. You're scratching in the wrong place. So if your children are causing problems and trouble, don't just complain about your children. How about looking at some things, some ways which you can actually solve those situations? How you can help your children with your difficulties, not with their difficulties. Because that's the title, the real title of the talk. We had the title of how to help children with their difficulties. It's always helping somebody else. But I'm going to change the title of how to help children with your difficulties. Because we can do that. Because after a while we can actually encourage our children and spend a lot of time praising them, encouraging them, building them up. For example, that one of the experiences which I had when I was a school teacher, I did spend 1 year teaching children in high school before my sort of higher calling of being a monk became so strong that I had to take a few years off to become a monk. Actually, that one of the other reasons I became a monk in Thailand, because in Thailand there was a tradition of temporary ordinations. I thought that I'd only become a monk for 1 or 2 years. But I was in the fortunate position as soon as I became a monk that I realized that's what I'd always wanted to do in life. I could serve others in my role as a monk, and I could also grow in my own happiness. What better career you can have than being happy yourself and being able to give happiness to others. But I did teach for 1 or 2 years in a school, and on this one occasion when I started work in a new school, I was teaching mathematics. I was told that one of the children had come bottom of the class the year before, and there was someone I was told was no good at maths. But now, I've always been a rebellious person, even as a youth, as a monk, always looking things in a different way, trying to see another road to succeed in life. Instead of always following the old paths, always trying to see new paths, if at all possible. So I didn't accept that this boy was no good at maths. I decided to do a little experiment. For 1 whole year, I was a maths teacher, I would spend extra time with this one boy. After the class, I'd go up to him and say, did you understand that? Spend a few extra minutes with him. I'd encourage him when he got something right. I'd always praise him and said, oh, well done, you've done very, very well to be able to understand that problem. I agree it was unfair to all the other children in the class because I gave this one boy special attention. And after 1 year of this, do you know what happened? After the end of the year exam, that boy came top of my class. I proved to myself, to him, as I'm trying to suggest to you now, there's no such thing as a person being no good at maths. There's no such thing as a child being no good at English. It just means a child has got it into their mind that they are no good. It's because they've got bad marks, because they've been criticized, because they've been told by their parents and their teachers they're no good. They actually believe that, and that's why they are no good. So part of training a child, even part of training one of my monks in the monastery, if any monk comes up and says they're no good at meditation, I don't believe that. I just give them extra attention. And soon they become better than me. Can you understand what I'm saying here? That a lot of children need encouragement. And there should be never a saying that you can't do this. Even that some people in my monastery say, oh, I'm only a lay person. I can't become enlightened. Oh, I've been meditating for such a long time. I can't get peaceful. And I say that's not the right way of saying things in Buddhism. It's not that I can't. It's just I haven't yet. Because the future is uncertain. And with nurture, with encouragement, it's amazing just how we can encourage, change, and allow our children and ourselves and our friends actually to reach heights which most people would think are absolutely impossible. You just need encouragement, that's all. So one of the things which I'm going to encourage you today is to encourage your children as well. Is whenever they do well at their school, at any class, whenever they do their homework, whenever they do anything which you want to increase in their life, please praise them, encourage them, make them feel confident. Because with that confidence they will do so well at school and at university. So often it's the case that when it comes to exam times, that some children who have done all of the work, who have studied hard, because of fear, they don't succeed very well. In fact, they sometimes fail. It's just fear, that's all. And any coach of a sports team would know that it doesn't matter just how good your opposition is. If you go to that sports team and say, you're going to lose tomorrow, you're going to lose, there's no way you can win, then that coach would get the sack. Now you are the coach of your children. Do you deserve the sack? Are you encouraging your children, giving them confidence to face the tests of life? Now with that positive thinking, we can encourage our children. We can always say that you can do this. Sometimes when the children do their examinations, their tests, sometimes we've got this idea that tests are just so stressful. But for many children in Perth, whenever they're doing examinations and tests, I try and give them confidence. Some years ago, a young lady who was doing some examinations in a university came up and asked for some chanting from the monks. Now, chanting has only got a very, very little degree of power to help you pass your examinations. But what chanting can do, otherwise it'd be very unfair, wouldn't it? Otherwise, if I chanted for your child and he got good marks, and the word got around, I would never be able to come here for a talk. I'd be chanting to all the children in Singapore. But this lady came along, we gave her some chanting. We did this because we thought that it would give her confidence. And with that confidence, that might just allow her to relax in her examinations and do well. I never saw her again. She didn't come and say how well she did. It was only her friends came along and said that she failed. And she was going around the whole of Perth saying the monks in my monastery are no good. Ajahn Brahm's no good. It wasn't my fault. I found out from her friends that she was a party girl. She spent all of her evenings going out to dance clubs or to parties. She'd never done any studies. She thought the monks would take care of that part of her university life. So it's important to do those studies, to encourage your children to study, but to give them that confidence as well. And the other technique which I was using with a lot of success with some of the children in Perth was actually to make the connection between doing exams and, say, playing soccer or playing tennis or playing basketball. Because after all, isn't a sports competition, isn't that the same as examinations? Isn't like a video game when you're trying to do your best and beat the record? Is that too much different than doing examinations? The point was, I was trying to make examinations look like fun. Why is it your children can spend hours and hours and hours on video games, trying to beat the record, trying to beat their score, trying to do the best? They count that as fun. What is the difference between a video game and an examination at school or university? Still, you're trying to do your best. You're competing against something or someone, even if it's yourself or other people. The point is that we have the psychology that video games are fun. And that video games, even if you don't do well, it doesn't matter, it's not the end of the world. Unfortunately, with examinations, we don't count them as fun. We make them serious. We make them end of the world stuff. If you don't pass, ooh. Now that is the trouble. So because of that, the children are so afraid of passing their examinations or failing their examinations. They go into those examinations with just so much tension, they can never live up to their potential. So I try and let the children know that examinations are just like a game of life. They're important, just like every other test which you have in life. But not to make it a life and death situation. And that way, there's no fear. There's a sense of fun. There's a sense of energy which comes from fun. And there's a sense of being successful. When examinations become fun, when school becomes fun, then the children listen and they do well. When this talk becomes fun, people listen. That's why I tell jokes. That is important, at the end of my school year as a teacher, it was I had to set an examination in maths. And being Ajahn Brahm, I put a joke in the examination paper. I thought the headmaster would really discipline me as a teacher. I thought I'd get into trouble. But I put the joke in a maths examination. I think the first teacher to do that in that school. And I was the invigilator. I was the master when every child of this year came in to do their examinations. They were sitting in front of me, just as you are. And you can see just how nervous each of those children were. Even though it wasn't an important examination, it was the end of the year examination, but it wasn't like the English O-levels or A-levels. It was the year before O-levels. And all these children came in so nervous. And I told them to be quiet, as you have to during an examination. The paper was turned upside down until it was a time for everyone to start. And being the person in charge of this examination, I looked at my clock and said, "Turn over the papers now, the examination starts." And I had to watch every child to make sure that no one was cheating. But I was waiting for them actually to see that in one of those questions there was a joke. And I remember with great happiness seeing one child after the other read the examination paper, come across the joke and be so surprised, look up at me because they knew who set the paper, smile, relax, and then they did well. Because that's what it was there for, to tell them that examination was important but not the end of the world. Making them smile meant that they relaxed. And when they relaxed, that's when they did well. So it's important for your encouraging your children to give them these techniques on how to succeed in life. Look, when you're going for an interview for a job, do you tense up? If you tense up, what boss is going to hire you? They've got to live with you. They want someone who can work hard, who can relax, but also can be fun to work with. Because when it's fun to work with, we get lots of things done. So this is how you're teaching your children now. Exams are fun. It's like playing video games. It's like playing sport. It's just another game, where through putting fun into our life, we're giving our life energy, we're relaxing, and then we can live up to our potential. Have you seen underlying all of these techniques here is like encouraging our children? That is your job as parents, to encourage them. and positive reinforcement, encouragement, has been shown time and time again to work much more powerfully than what we call negative reinforcement, otherwise known as punishment. Sometimes you've got no choice, but it's been shown in educational psychology, it's been well known in Buddhism for 2500 years, that positive reinforcement is so powerful. What we mean by positive reinforcement is you encourage children, you praise them, you build up their confidence. Whatever activity, action of body, speech and mind is really what you want to see in your child, you praise them, you encourage them. And that way the children like encouragement, they like praise, they want to be loved, they seek out that love, they want more of that love. And they will actually repeat those actions which you praise to get more love, to get more attention. Now this is actually a different way of actually encouraging children. Look into their activities, whatever they do, and praise them. Encourage them. I know this because in educational psychology, and also in my life as a monk, I've seen this happen many times. I've always picked up articles which reaffirm what I know from my own mind, what I know from my own understanding of psychology. There was a group of children, I think it was in Europe, who had an eating disorder. It was a rare disease, but a very terrible disease, where the children would never be able to actually to keep food down. Any solid food, after a few seconds, they would vomit it up again. They tried many types of drugs, but nothing was working as well as a little group who solved the problem in this way. They would have a group of children with their parents, some nurses, and whenever any child kept their food down for more than 10 seconds, the parents and the nurses would throw a party. They put on the child's favorite music, they put on funny hats, they start dancing and singing with the child at the center of the celebration. They found that those children started to keep their food down longer and longer and longer until they were completely cured. Just the encouragement, the feeling of being the source of other people's happiness, literally rewired their nervous system and encouraged them to be better, good, more healthy people. That's why encouragement is so powerful for our children. So whenever you see your children doing something good, encourage them please, spend time with them. Because with that encouragement, there'll be growth in those qualities we want to see in our children. I was very fortunate growing up to have a father who encouraged. I'll tell you something about my father, because my father was actually born in Liverpool. He came from a very poor family. I never knew my father's father, my grandfather. He died during the Second World War. However, my father would never speak well of my grandfather. In fact, my father hated him, because my father was a victim of what we now call domestic violence. His father he was a plumber, a simple man. He would come home every evening, drunk. He would take out his belt for no reason at all, would whip the kids, and then turn on his wife, my father's mother. But the result for my father, when he felt the end of the belt, when he saw his mother also being beaten, for no reason, just out of drunken violence, he told me that he resolved, even as a young child, if ever he survives, gets married and have children, he will never, never punish his children in that way. My father was not a disciplinarian at all. My father never beat us. My mother did, she was a disciplinarian. And there was a few times when I deserved a hiding, but my father wouldn't do it. And when I saw that, The result in me was I realized I'd done something wrong. I'd realized I'd let down my father. And because of that, I tried harder not to do those things again. It was a strange psychology. My father wasn't punishing me. I wasn't afraid of him. I was respectful of him. So respectful that when I grew up in London in the 60s and early 70s, before I became a monk, many of my friends started getting involved in drugs. This is one of the problems which we have with our children in all countries today. Not just in the West, but in Singapore as well. And one of the reasons why I never got involved in drugs was out of respect for my loving and caring father. I did not want to hurt him. There's no way I was going to embarrass him or cause him any type of suffering when he trusted me that much. It was another way of solving those problems. His example was so loving and caring that there's no way I would ever hurt such a man. It was that positive encouragement which made me what I am. And I respect that example. Even in my monastery in Perth, when any monk makes a mistake, what do you think the punishment is in a monastery? My monastery is very strict. When a monk makes a mistake, or even a young Anagarika. For example, our Singaporean Anagarika. An Anagarika is a person in our tradition in their first year of training. He'd only just come to our monastery for 2 or 3 weeks and he crashed our car. It was an expensive car too. He felt so guilty. I was giving some talks on the weekend. When I came back on Sunday evening, he disappeared. I had to find him on Monday. And when he confessed, he started crying. So I had to give him a punishment. I gave him 50 strokes of the cat. You know what 50 strokes of the cat is? We have a cat in our monastery. He had to stroke it 50 times. That's what we call 50 strokes of the cat. Because he wanted punishment, he did not understand compassion. So he had to stroke the cat 50 times to learn what compassion is and forgive himself. We all make mistakes. But when we give compassion rather than punishment, it's wonderful what it happens sometimes. Because he expected to be punished. He came from Singapore. But instead of punishment, I gave him, it's okay. I told him, look, people are more important than things. Compassion is more important than having a vehicle. Isn't that the Buddhist ethics of compassion, of kindness, of forgiveness, of love, of working together? Isn't that more important than a vehicle? You can crash as many vehicles as you like. But please don't crash the Buddhist teachings. And when I say things like that, he relaxed. When he relaxed, then he doesn't crash cars anymore. If I'd have punished him, then he'd have been so tense and so frightened, the next time he'd driven a car, he'd have probably crashed again. You understand why? Because fear is what challenges our children to fail. Because of fear, because we're afraid we never do well in life. Because of fear, we haven't got our parents who we really trust and love and care for. We haven't got them as our guides in life. We're afraid of them. So please, never let your children be afraid of you. Loving kindness, compassion of the Buddha is something which is not just a theory, It's not just something which was working many, many years ago. It actually works these days as well. Compassion is all powerful once you have it alongside of wisdom. The two have to work together. You have to be firm, but compassionately firm. Set boundaries, but with compassion and kindness as well for your children, to encourage and nurture them. Your job as parents with children is actually to the same as a gardener with a seed. You plant that seed, you grow that seed, you nurture it. There's only so much you can do. We all want our children to come top. How many people in a class of 30 can come top? It's strange just that our lack of wisdom when we try and be compassionate. I'm going to give you a little test at the moment. How many of you, now be honest now, because I'm going to ask you to put your hand up, honestly, how many of you think of yourselves as being above average intelligence? Put your hand up if you think of yourself as above average intelligence. You all do, don't you? But of course, only half of you could be above average intelligence. The other half are below average intelligence. That's what average means. So how much are we in denial about the realities of life? The realities of life is not every child can come top of the class, only one can. Not everyone can go to university, not everyone can be a doctor, can become a lawyer, but everyone can become a monk. What I really meant then was everyone can become wise and compassionate. So can your children. So what do you want your children to be in life? It doesn't matter if they're a doctor, a lawyer, a monk or whatever. What's really important, isn't it, that your children become wise and compassionate? Look at me. All those examinations which I did at school, O-levels, A-levels, university degrees, and teaching certificates, all those examinations, what did they help me? They didn't help me at all. If I only would have known I was going to become a monk. So the point is, sometimes that just because your children don't do the best, thank you. Thank you very much. I laugh at my own jokes, that's the trouble with me. Just because your children don't do the best, they are not failures. And please let your children know that. Because sometimes the children work so hard for their parents, they try so much, they feel they let their parents down when they don't do well. They feel they've failed. They've hurt the people they love the most. Imagine how that feels to a child. Their parents really want them to succeed. And my goodness, they tried. They just can't do it. Not every child can do it. So please encourage your child to do well. But it doesn't matter how well they do, as long as they've tried hard, praise them. And say thank you for all the hard work you've done. Even if you come bottom of the class, this other story I tell from my years as a teacher. That year, the one who came bottom the year before now came top, but there was another boy who came bottom that year, at the end of the year exam. There was one child has to come bottom. And when I gave out the results, all the children were just, some were expecting to do well, some were afraid of what they did. You know what it's like when you give out the results? And this one child, when he found out he became bottom, he looked so depressed. He looked so afraid he'd have to take that school report back to his parents. And you could see him, he looked so, so miserable. And out of compassion, I couldn't let him look so miserable. So I went up to that boy and I said, listen, sort of, you in Buddhism, they knew I was a Buddhist, even as a school teacher I was a Buddhist, and I said, you in Buddhism are what we call a bodhisattva. You've given up your own happiness for the sake of others. You've taken that terrible position at the bottom of the class. So no one else in that whole class has to take that position. You are actually a hero. You sacrifice so much. That little boy thought I was crazy. But he laughed, and that broke his depression. The next year, it was somebody else's charge to be the bodhisattva. But can you understand what I was doing there? That someone has to come bottom. It's not the end of the world. And if I sort of said that's a terrible thing you've done, if they really did get punished, if they really did feel terrible about themselves, sometimes they can even hurt themselves because they feel a failure in life. But I turned failure into a success for them. I said, it's a wonderful thing you're doing there. What I was doing, I was giving again encouragement, not making the exam the end of the world. Because it's true that sometimes people have a bad day. They do not so well in one exam, but then they do well in the other exam. If you can encourage your children, they will all find their place in the garden, which is why I use the simile of a seed. You're growing that seed. And every person has their place in the world. Please let your children know, whoever they are, however they do, they're all valued. We nurture our garden. My monastery is in to the south of Perth. It's in a forest, an Australian forest. When I first went to this forest in Western Australia, there were many dead trees. And there are some old trees. And there's some trees leaning too far to the left, some leaning too far to the right. My first idea was actually to cut down all the dead trees, even actually to cut down the ugly trees, what I thought were the useless trees. Until I was told by a person who knew more about the environment than I did or I would ever know, that those dead trees are the places where the birds nest. They build their nests in the hollows of the dead trees to raise their young. Those dead trees are vital for the health of the birds who live in that forest. So are the trees which are leaning to the left and the right, even the old trees. Every tree in a forest has its place, has its use. And that way I didn't just look at the big leafy trees as being the important ones. I found out that every part of a forest is just as important as the next. In our life, it's not just the big businessmen, it's not just the elites, it's not just the doctors, not just even the monks who are important. Everyone is important. If you were all monks or nuns, who would feed me? You are important to me. So everyone has their place in this world. Now, if you can encourage your children to feel that they're living up to whatever potential they have, they're finding their place in this world, whatever that place is, you encourage them to feel good about themselves, to feel confident, to encourage themselves. Not only will you actually allow your child to live up to their potential, whatever that potential is, but you're also giving yourself a lot of happiness. Because sometimes the way we judge things in the world is all skewed. We think as parents we're a failure if our children do not make it to university. Sometimes these days they think they're a failure if you don't go to university in the West. Please never think like that. Allow your children to grow in their own way. They don't all need to be university graduates. In fact, sometimes university graduates, they think too much, and because of that, they're very stupid. How many times has it been these so-called experts come along and they make so much confusion in the world? They know it all, but they feel very little. Very recently, I was so moved because I was invited to give a speech on grief, on death and dying, especially grief and loss, at a big conference, an Australia-wide conference, which was held in my local city of Perth. And they had professors and lecturers and people from overseas, people who were experts in their field, who had so many degrees after their name. And I gave my talk, and everyone went quiet. They heard things which the professors and lecturers hadn't told them. And when it came to question time, there was this very famous professor who was sitting next to me. And from the audience, they asked a question, and the professor says, turned to me and said, ask the expert. I was so moved to be able to be called an expert. Well, I had no degrees at all, and not in that field anyway. My field was theoretical physics. What's that got to do with grief and loss or raising children? Now, it's interesting, somebody asked me this question just today, this morning. Ajahn Brahm, you give a talk on so many different subjects. How come that what you say makes so much sense? Where do you get your wisdom from? I think the last time I was in Singapore, I also mentioned that about 2 months ago, a man came to see me. He reminded me that about 2 years previously, I'd attended a conference about the transport problems in Perth. Now I get involved in all sorts of things, even like trucking. And at this conference, that somebody, because it was strange to see a Buddhist monk amongst all these engineers and experts on transports and roads, that they gave me an interview. And their interview was actually for the shipping news. And I gave them the interview about Buddhism and shipping. And I forgot all about it. But they came, you know, just 2 months ago to tell me. They told me that that article, they actually called it Zen and the Art of Shipping, that article apparently was so well received that it was republished in many shipping journals all over the world. And he said that he was talking with one of his friends who was an expert in the field, who's one of these consultants which governments pay all this money to find out, you know, to solve their problems in shipping. And he said his friend, this great consultant, said, oh, that monk, he really knows what he's talking about. I confess, I don't know anything about shipping. I don't know what I'm talking about. But somehow or other, you get to the heart of these problems. You open your mind up with meditation, with mindfulness, with peace. You listen to your heart, and there you find the answers to all the problems of life. I've been going around telling people, I'll say this at the conference, about bridging traditions, about getting the heart of wisdom. All of the scriptures of Buddhism, you will not find them in libraries, in temples, or in public libraries. All of the scriptures of Buddhism, the teachings of Buddhism, you will find in your own heart. Every word which the Buddha uttered came from his heart, came from opening the heart of wisdom. And if you practice as a Buddhist, not just come listen to talks, but put these teachings into practice, open your heart up, you will have all the wisdom you will ever need to look after your children, to nurture them, and to actually to allow them to grow into good people. So wisdom comes from inside. All my wisdom of shipping comes from opening the door of my heart. Comes from inside here. So we're sensitive to our children. When we actually see them, we open our heart to them. And we know that sometimes we have to be firm. Sometimes we have to be caring. When we're sensitive, we know what to do at the right time and the right place. This is actually how we become wise people. Unpredictable, because we're not just following just old ways of doing things. We become resourceful. We see new ways of doing things, new ways of encouraging the children in our care. But I need to say one more thing about raising children, the children's problems. We do need to actually to take time with our children in order to be sensitive and to listen to what they need. There's an old story which I got from the internet some years ago
It's a very tragic story, but it's a beautiful story. A father came home one evening after a hard day at the office. His young 6-year-old boy was waiting for him and said, "Daddy, how much do you earn in 1 hour at work?" His father said, "Look, that's got nothing to do with you, son. I'm tired. Leave me alone." And his 6-year-old said again, "Daddy, how much do they pay you an hour?" "Like I told you, son, be quiet. I want to rest." "Daddy, how much do they pay you 1 hour? How many dollars?" "Right, that's it," said the father. "Go to your room. You're grounded." Because sometimes when you come home, you're very tired. And what does it matter to a child how much you earn in an hour? It's got nothing to do with them. So he sent the child to the room. Now after half an hour or an hour, when the father relaxed, he felt so guilty. He'd been so unfairly firm to his son. He decided to go up to his son's room and say sorry. So he went up to his son's room and opened the door gently and said, "Look, I was so tired. I had such a busy day at the office. I'm sorry I shouted at you. If you really want to know, and I don't know what it's got to do with you, I earn $20 an hour." The son smiled and said, "Daddy, could you please lend me another $10? And the father said, "What?" But then he'd already upset his son once, and so he controlled himself and said, "Look, I don't know what you want $10 for, but here's $10. And so he took $10 out of his wallet and gave it to his son. And his son smiled, reached under his pillow, and took out some other notes and coins, which was also to the value of $10. And he said, "Daddy, now I have $20. Can I have an hour of your time, please?" Do you get the message of the story? The little child could never get any time with his father, so he thought he'd have to pay his father $20 to get an hour of his dad's time. What a true but sad indictment of our society that is. So please spend time with your children, because they need it. And the time you spend with your children is well spent. If you don't spend time with your children now, quality time, good time, you'd have to spend much more time in the future with all their problems at school and other places. It's an investment of the future. You spend time with them now, and you don't have to spend so much time worrying about the problems in the future. So it's like spending time and caring and being sensitive to your children, understanding where they're coming from, what they need, encouraging them, praising them, looking after them, getting those good qualities going, not putting too many demands on them, especially at school. They don't have to succeed in the way you want them to succeed. Allow them to succeed in the way a Buddha would want them to succeed. Feeling that they're valuable no matter who they are, no matter what they do in life. They don't need actually to be the elite. Sometimes the people who are the elite, the bosses, oh, they have so much suffering. Sometimes I wish I couldn't give good talks. Sometimes I wish people would walk out of my talks. Sometimes I wish that no one would come to listen to me. Then I could have an easy life. I could rest and relax. So sometimes the successful ones are the ones who have to do all the hard work. So whatever your child does in life, please encourage them to feel good about themselves, at peace with themselves. That way they will be actually living up to their highest possible potential, because they're relaxing. And number two, you're not putting these terrible demands on children to be something they can never be. You're valuing them no matter what part of the garden we call our community they become. It's called compassion, encouragement. We need all sorts of different people in our communities. All different types of flowers in our gardens. Your child has got their place in this world. They come into this world with their karma from the past. There's a limit to what they can do, but we encourage them. We encourage them and encourage them, and no matter whatever happens to them in life, if they are happy, at peace with themselves, good people, kind people, then you can be very proud as parents. I thought that my mother would be very upset that I had such a good education at Cambridge University and I ended up a monk. But my mother is so proud of me. It doesn't really matter sort of what you do in the world. Mothers are always proud of you. Even I know that some criminals in jail, because I used to visit prison, their mothers were so proud that their
they told me.
Now that's a love for a mother is that strong. They'd love the child no matter what they ever do. That sort of love actually can actually encourage your child not to be a criminal, not to do bad things. They know they've got parents who love and care for them, who can encourage them. In the world, it's so tough. We get criticized, our faults get pointed out at school, at work. But at least we have a home where we have parents who we know who really love us. A place where we can truly relax. Where people can understand us. Understand how hard we work and how hard we strive. And if you have parents like that, you will have children. They may not be successful in school, they'll be successful in life. And isn't that what we really want? I'm redefining what success is. Success in life means happy, at peace with themselves. People who don't even think of committing suicide or getting lost in drugs. People who feel so at ease. They are naturally good people. People who you are proud of. So can we redefine success for our children? And then we find most of the problems we have of raising children are completely gone. We want our children to be happy, to feel at peace with themselves. Then they will do well in whatever part of the garden we call life they actually find a place in. So those are a few Buddhist ideas about how to solve your problems in raising children. Thank you very much.